Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Tommy McNeil reporting. Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta said Saturday he's looking to fix the country's judicial system after the Supreme Court there nullified his election win, citing irregularities at the polls. For the second time in 2 days, Kenyatta accused the court of usurping the will of the people in its choice to overturn Kenyatta's election victory. Its Supreme Court cites irregularities and illegalities committed by the Electoral Board during the vote, which the court said harmed the integrity of the election. Kenya's constitution says fresh elections now must be held in 60 days. The leaders of the United States and South Korea Friday reaffirmed the need to bring Pyongyang back to the negotiating table by applying maximum sanctions and pressure, according to the office of President Moon Jae-in, on North Korea. Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders was asked to clarify President Trump's stance on diplomacy with Pyongyang.
The president's looking for an integrated process, and we're continuing to move forward on that. We take North Korea extremely seriously, and all options are on the table. That hasn't changed.
Moon and U.S. President Trump spoke by telephone. The White House said in a statement the two leaders discussed the close and continuing cooperation between the United States, South Korea, and Japan. President Trump has asked Congress for nearly $8 billion in aid for relief and recovery efforts in Texas and Louisiana after Hurricane Harvey damaged the Gulf Coast region last week. The storm has displaced more than 1 million people and claimed the lives of dozens of others. Houston area officials said that 156,000 homes have been damaged in one county alone. This is VOA News. The White House says President Donald Trump will announce his decision Tuesday on whether or not to end the Obama administration policy that protects children of undocumented immigrants who entered the United States illegally. White House spokeswoman Sarah Huckabee Sanders told reporters earlier in the week that the Trump administration was still reviewing the program known as DACA, or Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. Mr. Trump pledged on the campaign trail to scrap the program, calling it amnesty. Since taking office, he has said that the issue is one of the most difficult he has dealt with as president. House Speaker Paul Ryan and several other Republican lawmakers are urging the president not to cancel the program. Ryan says he believes Congress should come up with a way of protecting people now in the DACA program. A group of state attorneys grappling with the issue in their states had set a Tuesday deadline for decision from the Trump administration. Approximately 400 people have died in violence in Myanmar's Rakhine state over the past week. That's according to military officials, who also say that almost all of them were Muslim insurgents. A military Facebook page reported the number, saying 370 were insurgents, more than two dozen killed were either police or civilians. Members of the minority Rohingya Muslim community, however, have reported attacks on their villages that left scores dead and forced thousands to flee. Robert Raffaele has more.
The officer in charge of Teknef police station said the bodies of the Rohingya Muslim refugees had been buried at a local graveyard. On Thursday, 26 bodies of women and children were recovered after three boats carrying Rohingya fleeing violence in Myanmar capsized in Bangladesh.
Human Rights Watch said Saturday satellite imagery recorded Thursday in a Rohingya Muslim village shows that destruction of 700 buildings. The rights group says that 99% of the village was destroyed and the damage signatures are consistent with fire. Russia's foreign ministry has accused the FBI of planning a search of its San Francisco consulate after ordering its closure Thursday. A spokeswoman for the ministry said the search, which the United States did not confirm at the time, would create a direct threat to the security of Russian citizens. She said in a statement that American Special Services intended on September 2nd today to carry out a search of the consulate in San Francisco, including the apartments of employees who live in buildings and have diplomatic immunity. Meanwhile, the Associated Press reports that the firefighters were called to the site of the consulate but not allowed to enter after black smoke was seen billowing from a chimney there. I'm Tommy McNeil in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clawty in Washington.
I think the Commission would not say much at this stage until the full ruling of the court comes out. That would be a basis for any discussion, a basis for any action that the Commission will take.
The Kenyan Deputy President William Ruto calls on the Electoral Commission to set a date for the presidential election rerun.
I will meet with the executive and stakeholders of the ADT, then to see if we can get another office space or renovate the Bond office. The election is about 6 months away, and this is a big blow to the Alliance Democratic Party.
A Sierra Leonean presidential candidate searches for a new office after the party's headquarters was allegedly burned down deliberately.
Speech was just generic, really talking about the usual stuff, about how young people should get together and work. I believe it was very strategic for her not to mention anything, first of all, because it's a case that is already doing ground through the court.
And the Zimbabwean First Lady Grace Mugabe makes her first public comments Friday. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The Kenyan Deputy President William Ruto has called on the Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission, or IEBC, to set a date for the next presidential election. His comment came after the Supreme Court annulled the outcome of the presidential vote and ordered a rerun of the poll within 60 days. Incumbent President Uhuru Kenyatta disagreed with the ruling but said he was ready for the rerun. Meanwhile, supporters of the main opposition National Super Alliance, or NASA, have called on the chairman of the IEBC to resign. This after accusing him of failing to organize credible elections. For reaction, I reach Andrew Limo, spokesperson for the IEBC.
The chairman, in essence, is saying that he respects the decision of the court and that the commission will comply with the requirements of the court. But remember that it must not be 60 days. 60 days is the upper limit. So the commission will meet and decide on which day they will hold elections and come up with a timeline.
Would the IEBC have the time to print the ballot papers and to dispatch them expeditiously in time to prepare for the elections to meet the deadline as ordered by the Supreme Court?
Yeah, Peter, I think our procurement laws provide for alternatives as long as there is a public participation. And I foresee a situation where the commission will invite stakeholders, discuss the matter and see the urgency about it, and look for options, because there is even an option for direct procurement. But I would not like to mention any method. The commission will definitely meet as soon as possible and decide on the way possible. But I think this is doable. It's possible. We have seen cases where during the election, the courts, there have been court orders to include some people in the election or some candidates at the last minute, and there have been a way out within the law.
When do you anticipate members of the commission to meet to come up with the next step forward in time? Because time is of the essence here. To meet and come up with the strategy to organizing this presidential election again?
I would not know with certainty when, but from the indication and what I saw from the chairman, they may even meet over the weekend. It looked very urgent that the chairman wanted the process started as soon as possible. Yeah.
The opposition coalition, NASA, that took the case to court, said they don't trust Commission Chairman Wafula Chebukati to organize credible elections again, and some of them have even called for him to resign and his team. What has been the reaction from the IEBC?
I think the commission would not say much at this stage until the full ruling of the court comes out. That would be a basis for any discussion, a basis for any action that the commission will take. I think we are in the middle of wait and see, and if you heard from what the chairman said, he has called on the Supreme Court to fast track the issuing of the full ruling and that will definitely guide our next action.
Well, obviously, there have been mixed reactions. Those who think they have won are happy. Those who think they have lost are sad. So far, what has been the reaction that the IEBC has gotten following the court's decision and the call by the IEBC for Kenyans to remain calm as the Electoral Commission or the IEBC finds ways of trying to organize the election as ordered by the court?
Our management body is always neutral, so winning and losing is not part of an electoral management body. So for us, we, as long as we are calm, we and the courts have spoken, we will be able to conduct another election fairly and freely as possible.
So what is the overriding message to the people of Kenya following the court's ruling Friday?
I think I'll echo the chairman's sentiment that the public remain calm and just wait for the process. I mean, we mean well, we mean well for this country, and we would like all the best to be undertaken. And so the commission will be very keen where they will be informed. I will improve on it. And as the chairman says in his statement, you know, the actual process of the election has not, there's no aspirations that have been cast on that particular process of voting and the counting of the votes. Yeah, it's much more of the transmission and the other processes, the logistics and administrative issues therein.
The chairman also stated that there could be a possible shake-up. When do you expect this to happen?
Well, he hinted on that for sure, Peter, but that is really for the commissioners to decide. I think during their meetings, they will then come up with timelines and how this will be done. As of now, I wouldn't know.
Andrew Limo is the spokesperson for the Kenyan Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission, IEBC. He spoke with me from the capital, Nairobi. The leader of the Sierra Leonean Opposition Alliance Democratic Party, or ADP, Mohamed Kamari Mbamansere, says his party is in search for a new office to lead in readiness for the upcoming general election. His remark came after the national headquarters of the party was set on fire earlier this week. AD supporters say the office attack appears to have been politically motivated since, they said, the party is gaining popularity in the stronghold of the ruling All People's Congress, or APC. Party. But the ruling party sharply denies the accusation as false and without merit. For more on the search for a new office, I reach Mohamed Kamari Mbamansere, presidential candidate for the Opposition Alliance Democratic Party, ADP.
I will meet with the executive and stakeholders of the ADP, and then I will try to see if we can get another office space or renovate the bond office. The election's about 6 months away, and this is a big blow to the Alliance Democratic Party and me as a presidential candidate for the upcoming elections, because as I'm speaking to you today, Saturday, the 2nd of September, we don't have a headquarters office. But I'm heading to two locations to look for a different office spaces.
How soon do you think you will get a new office? Understandably, because of the recent flooding, you know, real estate is quite difficult in the capital, Freetown. How challenging is this, and how soon do you think you can get one for your party in the run-up to the election?
Extremely challenging. The problem we are having right now as a political party, land owners or building owners, we have some kind of paranoia or be afraid to lease an office space to us, knowing that their building will be gutted and or set on fire. So our problem right now is not just the scarcity of an office space, but the willingness from landowners or building owners to lease us an office space in Freetown. Apparently, one of our offices in the provinces, the landlord returned the lease money so that requested we hand over the office to them. This is in Kenema District.
Why don't you renovate the burnt out one, since at least you still have the lease for it?
Yes, it's going to be a lot of money. The estimate is about $50,000. So we have to build a whole floor. And then the second floor is also 60% bond. So it's very much going to cost a lot of money. About the estimate roughly for now, it's about $50,000 to renovate it. But it's another option. I will be having a meeting today, later on this Saturday, with my diaspora team in America and the UK and Australia, so that we can set a piece and see how to raise these funds to renovate this office.
Some people are saying that you are to blame for what is happening to your party and your party's campaign office being torched, since the police are still investigating. What have you heard from the police since the investigation began? And from what I hear, you are still facing charges of having a firearm that you failed to register.
That's not true. They are according to the current charge in court, saying that I was in possession of a stun gun flashlight without license. I have three bodyguards, security, and I have armed police officer that day. So there's no way I will be in possession of a stun gun with me. It's not even possible. I don't even hold my cell phone while in public. My security holds the cell phone. So there's no way I can be in possession publicly. But when you talk about people are saying I have to be blamed. The only blame that I've been the main voice for the voiceless in this country. And you can blame saying that because Kamarimba is the main opposition leader, this is why his office has been burnt, and this is why he's been arrested and sent to prison, and this is why he's been... All those initial three charges were discharged. They were dropped, and a new fresh charge, one charge, was issued. And in the matter, I wish I can elaborate more further, but you know the contempt of court. I can't tell you what is going on inside the court. But all I can say was I was not in possession of a stun gun with me that day, while the armed police officer was with me all day, and three of my bodyguard security there with me that day. It's that just not possible.
Mohamed Kamarimba Mansere is the leader of the Opposition Alliance Democratic Party, or ADP. He spoke with me from the Sierra Leonean capital, Freetown. The Zimbabwean First Lady Grace Mugabe made her first public comments Friday since facing assault allegations in South Africa. She, however, avoided any mention of the incident which occurred 2 weeks ago. South Africa granted Mrs. Mugabe diplomatic immunity after she was accused of attacking a 20-year-old model at an upmarket Johannesburg hotel. Speaking at a rally in the Zimbabwean city of Gweru, Mrs. Mugabe described her 93-year-old husband as a prophet for other African leaders and said Robert Mugabe would retire when he feels his body is no longer able to keep up. For more about her speech, I reached Rejoice Ngwenya, a Zimbabwean political analyst in the Zimbabwean capital, Harare.
Well, she technically stayed clear of the controversy in South Africa, because you will know that the previous day, the local ZANU-PF supporters in Harare had organized themselves in a solidarity march for Grace Mugabe. But she did not pitch up, neither did Robert Mugabe, the husband. But of course, there were a few cronies here and there who are your normal traditional praise singers. But, you know, her speech was just generic, really talking about the usual stuff about how young people should get together and work. So, you know, I believe it was very strategic for her not to mention anything, first of all, because it's a case that is already doing rounds through the courts. And secondly, if she had said anything, she would have been open to a lot of criticism and ridicule, because the private media would have really taken it to task.
It appears the enthusiasm that people expressed about the alleged assault case in neighboring South Africa appears to be tapering off. What is the cause of this?
Well, one thing that is for sure, Zimbabweans know that the pursuit for justice for a case that was committed outside the borders is very difficult. And mind you, we are dealing with a person that we know the impunity and the arrogance of this panel is such that it doesn't matter how much space you put in media to discuss about it, nothing can change. So my feeling really is that people know that there is a stage at which this case has reached in South Africa in terms of the case going to court. So they are probably waiting to find out how independent or how effective the judiciary system is in South Africa. But from this side of the Limpopo, I can tell you that there has not been as much enthusiasm as it was when the case happened a few weeks back.
Are the civil society organizations who initially made a lot of noise putting pressure on the government to speak up about this alleged assault case being having any traction at all?
The most rational thing would have been to challenge the issue of how a state family abuses diplomatic immunity and, greely around the question of why she claimed that she was on government business when she was on private business. But I can tell you that the preoccupation now is about the voting system. There is more excitement, Peter, about the Supreme Court judgment in Kenya in nullifying Uhuru Kenyatta's election than the great Mugabe's case of beating up a teenager. But like I said, I think, people are really, they have put so much faith in AfriForum and the legal system in South Africa that they are just waiting to see whether the floodgates of litigation will open. But so far, we are much more interested now in the electoral process and what's happening in Kenya.
A lot of the opposition groups have demanded electoral reforms. Do you see any of these reforms that they demand happening, taking a cue from the Kenyan election?
The litmus test for ZANU-PF's propensity for change, to put it lightly, was the application for a television license by Kwesi TV that is owned by media mogul Trey Masiwa. So the mere fact that already the government is very sensitive to media reform, a very simple administrative issue really, it really means that this government, as it stands today, is not willing to reform itself out of power. So it's very unlikely that the kind of electoral reforms that we have been talking about that are taking place in Kenya will ever see the light of day. So I think on that front, really, Peter, I'd say it's a very pessimistic state of affairs.
Rejoice Ngwenya is a Zimbabwean political analyst. He spoke with me from Harare. South Africa has had a long love affair with food originating in neighboring Mozambique. Its recipes are influenced by the Portuguese who colonized the territory on Africa's southeast coast from 1498 until 1975. For hundreds of years, Portuguese traders crossed the ocean to bring spices from the east to the port now known as Maputo. It's these flavors that have crossed the border and continue to be embraced by South Africans, especially the nation's growing black middle class. For VOA, Darren Taylor reports on tastes of the continent that have swept South Africa.
People enjoy meals seated on white chairs and at tables covered with blue and white checked material in a restaurant in northern Johannesburg. Paintings of fish adorn the walls. Co-owner Johnny Myers says while Portugal colonized Mozambique, Mozambicans colonized the Europeans' culinary creations to suit African palates. He cites the world-famous fiery red peri-peri sauce. Myers is adamant it originated in Mozambique, not Portugal. He's supported by researchers. They give the origin of the word peri as Bantu, meaning chili, in the Ronga language of southern Mozambique.
You go to Portugal and you have a peri-peri chicken. It's nothing like ours. It comes almost like a casserole. South Africans love the crispy kind of chicken, the peri-peri taste. Portuguese food is not as spicy as Mozambican.
Maya's Zimbabwean business partner, Moffat Mklanga, grinds pepper over his lemon and herb basted chicken.
Unfortunately, I just enjoy the mild one. I can't take the hot.
Hey, yeah. No, man. You're a coward, man.
Flames lick a chicken on the griddle in the eatery's kitchen. Myers and Mklanga's first cooks were from Mozambique. They left after some of their compatriots were assaulted and even killed in xenophobic attacks on African immigrants in 2008. But not before they'd passed their skills on to current chefs like Ernie Chapise.
Big spice, paprika, honey, lemon juice, water, beer.
Chapise lists ingredients he uses to make chickens Mozambique style. He flattens a bird with a mallet. Next, he plunges it into a mixture including African bird's eye chilies, onions, olive oil, salt, and bay leaves. The chickens are ready for char grilling after marinating for 2 days. Meyer's current favorite is grilled peri-peri prawns or shrimp, sourced from Mozambique's Indian Ocean.
At the moment we have these Mozambican tigers, which are just unbelievable. The taste is just different. It's not a cultivated product, it's a natural product. So, you know,
like his prawns nacional, the base of many Mozambican dishes is coconut, including the curry.
We cook peppers, onions, a bit of fish stock, and then we add the coconut cream base, yeah, with the curry powder. We add a bit of chutney to give it a bit of a sweeter taste, yeah.
Myers visits Mozambique to get ideas for new dishes. It's where he learned to make trinchado, steak chunks in red wine sauce. Melted beef fat gives it rich texture. South African food writer Ponso Pilane opens a Mozambican Laurentina beer to savor with her trinchado.
Your palate is traveling Africa, but you don't need the very expensive plane ticket.
She says it's ironic that South Africans' desire for Mozambican-inspired food continues to grow, while they simultaneously complain that there are now too many of their neighbors in the country. I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in Johannesburg.
Flood waters are beginning to recede around Houston, and although the rain has stopped, health problems have not. In fact, as VOA's Carol Pearson reports, some are just beginning.
The sight is amazing. More than 3.5 trillion liters of water fell on Houston and southeast Texas for 5 consecutive days. Aerial views show just about everything underwater. Now that Hurricane Harvey has moved on, the danger has not ended. Downed power lines electrocuted at least 2 volunteer rescuers when their boat hit the power lines they couldn't see. And a young man died when he stepped into electrified water when he went home to search for his sister's cat. Jodel Pasek, his mother, said her son's last words were, "I'm dying," as he warned a friend not to follow him.
They couldn't even help my son. They couldn't resuscitate him. He was in electrified water.
Virginia Rogers Grasso and many others fled their homes at a moment's notice.
About 11 o'clock, some little guys came and rang the doorbell and told us it was mandatory you have to leave, that your house is fixing to be flooded.
People with diabetes didn't have time to collect life-saving medications like insulin. Others left without blood pressure or cholesterol-controlling drugs. The Centers for Disease Control, local hospitals, and pharmacies are helping out. Doctors have volunteered their time to help with routine medical care. But with lots of water and daytime temperatures in the 30s, Dr. Samuel Dorovich says Houston is a perfect breeding ground for mosquitoes and bacteria. Dorovich is an epidemiologist at the University of Illinois.
The public health concerns following Hurricane Harvey go way beyond the immediate flooding and rainwater. The concerns extend to mosquitoes and the diseases they carry when standing water is available, especially in containers. Mental health is a concern. Mold growing in damaged homes is a concern.
Dorovich says people exposed to floodwater can develop multidrug-resistant staph infections, or E. coli, bacteria that can also be deadly.
If wastewater treatment facilities are overwhelmed, there's potential for sewage to get into the water, and then there's the drinking water that comes out of the tap, which is threatened as well by flooding that's limiting the activity at one of Houston's drinking water treatment plants right now.
As the water recedes, mold and respiratory problems caused by mold can increase. Water-soaked walls, insulation, furniture, and carpeting can cause illness or even death. The CDC and public health officials can help address these problems. The Environmental Protection Agency will soon test floodwater samples when conditions allow. The agency will also test drinking water and wastewater facilities. But for some, the worries could result in lasting trauma, especially for those who saw family members or friends perish, and for those who lost everything they had. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotter, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. And right now it's time for music from our African collection. Thank you.
Mwana wa bandi, mkwate ngu mwana wa bandi, mkwate ngu mwana wa bandi, mkwate ngu mwana wa bandi. kabofule mune kabule ya jamula bukubandiye abantu urilo mumisinga kubiranga kone mchatinga toli mulozinga ngomulavinga tenoke yalinga abayonga yesu mba umewe wakanga wetu sera mwana wakumeka ulusino tatari neka sigara yonga kumeka munga kulindi geka mkwate mwana wabani mkwate mwana wabani
yaye era nabo fukamo yaye mwe babanga bakulembeze bayaye nabatuze bayaye yazali wa mukabuka kebunaira na kula nempisa ngaeto waza ngabulita tawesha mugamba mukondera ngaya mugamba tiye takula byachi kwangala ngaya mugana ebyo kurana ngabo mukubetama akuchusiza dala ayo kana nyo kubabuka balala ngaya mugana bawali nguli nenjaga ya manya choluso mwana wa mtu byakugana se abikola tatawe famu kwa sana kamara na watu nenjaga tetetali na tata kwa samu chitibwa yafuka moyo ile jinwa ayokera ruya yenne muchia yajasula abamwito muya yente byechia yebyakola yabaita baya yekubate bakola byebabulira oluna kulumunge njuwe natero kugwa yasange kanisa ngayone kaneka Mbite ya chimanyanzi ya liyachi kwangala Pasta ya limu yae nganonya za mata Namu ikirizo kusikano kukaba Mtiamu wese ntagenda ya mba wadagana Mbwe ya kuna sente nazi wa pasta ya mba na kumsomi ya iga Chali na pasta kwa samu chitibwa Yafuka muya yene nja yikatia jinwa Ayokeraru ya yene muchi ya yejasula Hala muito muya yente viechi ya yevyakola Na yaba itaba ya yekubate wakola vyebabulira Yeno ono chuka ochukufuka tato mulunja tesita zavana bakuyigire ko bijinyo emu kama watu akamba wana wange ba pasta bayaye manje na yena watufu banjinyo inge ya simbe binyewa merera mwebitoto yo pasta kwe wasanga Yalika miuche ya baku siwa siwa Wafuka muya iye menja ikatio jinywa Kukeranu ya iye nemuchi ya yajosula Ama kuito muya iye temechi ya yabiongona Chitufu le mama ya iye kubate wakole vivavulira
Gira tu chingale, chino tu chingale, gira tu chingale, we. Gira tu chingale, chino tu chingale, gira tu chingale, we.
You have been far away, ngomotima gulu maguluma, ngabuli rwenda.
nesunga watseko ngami babiro tumwemba oh manalota abangenga nesunga bala bomusaja kwenesunga muno mutseko na ye alizenze bambi
nantongo lava botuse ngatemba mika kulose Mwakulama utuna wanawani mama Mwukwano mwujiena Mitia wamijo watende ime yangu wano Oje mandenga siyala Lelo ntelenge
Don't you worry Cause time's a wendi
Nange wendi Nze uo
Jira tuchingale Chino tuchingale Jira tuchingale
Senga, senga yambo zanga Ntialiwa umusaja kwalize yani Lawa nesunga
Chino tuchingale Jira tuchingale
Menye kisi Wetonzi ni samatela Gomgongo wange mukaluba Tonkole vichitini Yeah Wejangu jangweno mati kukwateko Woto mate Mande mfanze piloso Watu sati Labo mulamu wewejaka Telo tuke Kubanali
And that was music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of The Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, producer Douglas Impuga and engineer for today, Justin Thwaite, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. I remember, as the elders say, if you can envision it, you can accomplish it. If you can imagine it, you can reach the heavens. I'm your host, Peter Clotter in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
An editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
No business endeavor can succeed without reliable and inexpensive delivery of electric power. Indeed, lack of energy has long been a damper on economic growth in sub-Saharan Africa. Yet today, some 620 million people living in Africa have no access to electricity. That is why 4 years ago, the United States launched the Power Africa Initiative. Power Africa is a partnership made up of 12 U.S. government departments and agencies, African governments, and a diverse coalition of more than 150 public and private sector partners, including bilateral and multilateral partners, international organizations, civil society organizations, and more than 130 private sector companies. Power Africa's approach recognizes that the public sector alone cannot solve the immense challenge of expanding electricity access in Africa, wrote United States Coordinator for Power Africa Andrew Herskowitz at the release of the 2017 Power Africa report. Rather, it is essential that we strategically use limited public funding to leverage large amounts of private capital and create enabling environments that will encourage continued investment for decades to come. Power Africa's goal is to double access to electricity in sub-Saharan Africa by increasing installed generation capacity by 30,000 megawatts and adding 60 million new household and business connections by 2030. Today, Power Africa is among the world's largest public-private partnerships in development history. It brings together more than 150 public and private sector partners. Together, they have committed over $54 billion toward achieving the initiative's goals. As a result, in the 4 years of its existence, Power Africa has facilitated power sector transactions that will generate more than 7,200 megawatts of power and have supported 10 million electrical connections, bringing electricity for the first time ever to over 50 million people. Power Africa has great potential to transform the continent while also creating new and expanded opportunities for U.S. companies, writes USAID Administrator Mark Green. The purpose for foreign assistance should be ending its need to exist. The progress that Power Africa is making shows that this is possible. Its efforts and American leadership have resulted in significant international momentum towards tackling Africa's energy crisis.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.